Hi there, I'm Janet Quinlan, and this is Finding Joy in Motherhood, the podcast for women who are looking for practical tools and words of encouragement to create an orderly, joyful, faith, and virtue-driven home. I'll share tips to create mindset shifts that change the way you discipline your children, love your husband, and enjoy your day. This podcast is about coaching women to be the best woman God is calling her to be. I'm so glad you're here. Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's episode, How to Listen. I recently participated in a workshop to help people listen with more intention, and I thought it would be helpful to share some of the content that I taught with all of you. So first, let me say that the skill of listening is your greatest gift in deepening relationships, particularly with your children. My kids are always surprised to find out that their friends don't call their parents much. And my children call me, my adult children call me frequently. And I think it's because I really do listen to what they're saying. Sometimes I even get off the phone and find myself questioning, did I listen well enough? And sometimes the answer is no. But most of the time, as the kids were growing up and now as adults, I'm very conscious of listening to what they have to say. And I think that actually goes back to my mom. When I was a young girl, about fourth grade, I think my mom felt like she was losing touch with me. So she began a habit of sitting me down on the couch, and she was sitting next to me, which really was very unusual. I don't think I ever saw my mom just sitting on the couch. But she asked how school was. And this happened every day when I came home from school. And at first I would just say, fine. And she'd say, tell me about what happened at school. And I would say, nothing. And then she would say, well, I know nothing didn't happen at school. So we'll sit here until you tell me what happened. And then she would ask me specific questions. What did you do in math? Do you have any homework? Who did you play with at recess? How was your lunch? And I really believe that I began to connect with my mom in a better way because she became intentional about connecting with me and listening to me. So in this episode, I want to talk about listening as a general way, how to listen to people, but more specifically, applying these concepts to listening to your husband and listening to your children. I think there are habits or ways that we listen that are in common with either listening to our husband or our children, but I also think there are some age and relationship specific details that are important to point out. First, let's talk about listening in general. What does it mean to be a good listener? First, I want you to think about how you would want others to listen to you. Do you want the phone in their hand? Do you want their eyes on something else they're doing, or do you want their attention? Do you want some sort of give and take interactions as you're telling them something? Do you want them to interrupt you to try to solve your problems? I think these are all good questions, and there are probably other questions to ask yourself. How do I want others to listen to me? There are some pretty basic concepts called active listening skills. Let me go through them pretty quickly. And then I want to add to them with some other skills that I think just a better form of connection with the people that we love the most. So in active listening, they say check your posture so that you're open to the person. They talk about, you know, not having your arms folded, and that is a sign to someone that you're not receptive. They talk about having eye contact and responding physically to what you hear. Maybe it's smiling or nodding. You want to notice the nonverbal cues of the person who is speaking. You want to have a mindful presence. In other words, you're fully connected with what's going on with this person who's speaking to you, rather than, oh my gosh, I've got to do the laundry. Hurry up and say what you need to say to me because I have to go do the laundry. Because people do recognize that unspoken energy. You want to be non-judgmental in something that someone is saying, particularly if you're dealing with teenagers who you want them to be honest with you and tell you what's going on or mistakes they've made. But if they're afraid that you're going to judge them and punish them immediately, they will not be open to you. So we really want to be non-judgmental in the sense of, let me just hear what you have to say and let's talk through the problem. You don't want to avoid what the person is sharing. So if someone comes to you and wants to tell you something, either a teenager or your husband, and you're afraid of how that's going to make you feel, and you say, oh, no, maybe we shouldn't talk about that now. That's really closing the door on connection. And you don't want to spend your time focusing on what your response is going to be. Let what your response is going to be come as it needs to come, but don't start thinking about it as someone is speaking to you. Because again, someone who is speaking to you can check that energy. They notice what's going on, and they notice that you're not really listening. So I want to take those active listening skills and take them a step further with things that I have learned as a coach. So as a coach, my job really is to listen to people, to listen to what they're saying and what they're not saying. As you're listening to your husband or your children, there are five things that we really want to see if we can hear in what they're saying. You've heard me talk about the coaching model in the past, and really it's just a model that's composed of five different parts of communication. We have the circumstance, we have the thoughts, the feelings, the actions, and the results. And these are the five different components to notice when you're listening to your children or to your husband. So let's say your child comes home from school and says, "No one likes me." Ask, why do you say that? "Tommy didn't play with me at recess." "Why? What was he doing?" "He played kickball with the other kids and I didn't want to play kickball." "And so what do you make that mean?" "He doesn't like me. No one likes me." Then you could ask, "So what did you do at recess when he played kickball with the other kids?" "I sat by myself and did nothing." Okay, that is just one example of an interaction with a child. So let's look at that, okay? The circumstances. These are things that happen in the world that we cannot control. We have to ask, are the circumstances as described to us really true? What's a different way to look at the circumstances? And to remember that we often confuse circumstances with our thoughts about the circumstances. And sometimes just clarifying the circumstances helps people see opportunities. So in the example I provided a moment ago, the circumstances are Tommy played kickball with the other kids. Your child sat by himself or herself. That's it. Those are the circumstances. Now we get to the second part. And again, you see why you have to clarify the circumstances. Because circumstances have to be proven in a court of law. In other words, they have to be really factually true with no adjectives or adverbs or judgments attached to them. They're just factually true. So then we come to the thoughts. Thoughts are sentences that happen in our mind. And we have programmed and deliberate thoughts. So programmed thoughts are thoughts that we have thought over and over and over again so that they just really become the thoughts that come front of mind when something happens. So if your child has had other instances where people have not really been wanting to be friends with him or have reached out in friendship with him, his programmed thought is, "No one likes me, no one likes me, no one likes me, he doesn't like me." And so when his friend Tommy decides to play with someone else, the programmed thought is, "No one likes me." And we need to really help our children understand Oh, that's just because that's your brain telling you that, but it doesn't mean it's true. Just because you think it, whether you're a child or an adult, it doesn't make it true. If someone comes to you and they express a thought, ask them, why are you thinking that? And when we get to the why, then we really understand what's going on with our children or what's going on with our husband. It's the why behind the thought that is expressed. And once we listen to the why, then we can ask some more questions. What if you could think something different about a particular situation? So, what if you could just have decided that Tommy wanted to play kickball today, and it doesn't mean he doesn't like you. He just likes to play kickball. Now, children, you know, they're still in the habit brain for most part, and they'll say, no, he doesn't like me. And they want to go right back to that habit brain. And our job is to help them see other ways to look at something, other ways to interpret something. What if he just wanted to play kickball today? Is that okay? No, it's not okay. Why isn't it okay? Because it means he doesn't like me. No, it doesn't mean he doesn't like you. Did he tell you he didn't like you? No. Well, maybe he just wants to play kickball today. Are there times when you want to do things that other kids don't want to do? Yes. Okay, you see what I'm doing? I'm asking the child questions to help them understand that the belief, the thought that they have is not necessarily true, and there are other ways to look at it. From our thoughts come our feelings. Feelings are one-word descriptions of the vibrations in our body. They're caused by our thoughts. They're not caused by the circumstances. So in the example, some other child who feels very confident could say, oh, Tommy played kickball, but I didn't feel like it. So I just sat over there and I had a great day today anyway. But the feeling that he was experiencing coming from the thought, no one likes me, was he's sad. Maybe he's angry. Feelings always come from our thoughts. So when a child comes to you and says, I'm really sad, or I'm very frustrated, or I'm angry, whatever the feeling is, ask why, so that you can listen to the thoughts that are creating that feeling or emotion. Why are you sad? Why are you angry? Tell me why you're frustrated. You know, when we try to make our children conform to happy, easy behavior all the time, and when they don't, we get angry and we start yelling at them. Rather than getting angry with our children for misbehavior or their own emotional dysregulation, let's find out why. Why are they having those feelings? What thoughts are causing those feelings so that they're acting out in a way that we feel we have to correct them? We live in a feeling-led world. And truthfully, I think one of the greatest skills we can give to our children is to teach them that feelings don't rule them, that they can rise above their feelings, that they can live through any feeling. And also to understand, what are you thinking that's causing those feelings? Do you want to think that so you feel this way? Because you have a choice as to what you think that creates the feeling. People are stuck in how they feel. So many women talk about being overwhelmed and anxious and fearful. And now they're describing their children as anxious. My child is anxious. We have to help our children live through feelings, uncomfortable feelings, so that they can begin to use their prefrontal cortex and decide what to do. Otherwise, we keep them locked in anxiety, and we don't want them to grow up as adults locked in anxiety, feeling like they have no control. So many children and adults think they don't have control over their feelings. They stay small in their fears, in their negative emotions. How do you want to feel about this person or this situation? That's the question to ask. So when you're Little kid comes home and says, Tommy won't play with me. Well, how does that make you feel? Ask. Makes me feel sad. Why? Because no one likes me. But we don't know that for sure, do we? That no one likes you because Tommy liked you yesterday. Just because he decided to do something different doesn't mean he doesn't like you today. So we've got to get real clear with our children what is a thought and what is a feeling. And we have to help them understand at a very young age that feelings last 90 seconds. Did you know that? It's true. They last 90 seconds. Now, some of you will say, I've been feeling something forever and ever and ever. Well, that's because you keep regurgitating basically that thought that creates that feeling. When you look at it and you understand the thought creates the feeling, I don't want to feel that way anymore. So how else could I look at it and have a different thought so I don't feel that way anymore? And then the feelings are what create our actions. So in the example, your little child felt sad or maybe angry because Tommy played kickball with someone else. What was his action? He went and sat by himself. But if he didn't think no one likes me, he could have said, oh, this is a day where I can go play something different with someone else and have confidence in moving to someone else to play with, rather than getting stuck in the feeling of sadness. Actions are what we do or don't do. And we have physical, intellectual, emotional actions. Why are you doing or not doing those things? Why did you sit by yourself? What are you feeling or thinking? We want to help our children be proactive rather than reactive or resigned. We live in a reactive world. This is something that I teach very clearly in my virtue-based parenting course. We cannot parent from a reactive stance. If we do, we're yelling, we're angry, we're never happy, and our kids actually don't know how to behave properly. We need to be proactive in teaching our children how to behave, what expectations are, but also to help them be proactive in the world rather than be victims and be reactive all the time. And then our actions create our results. What we see in the world, our lives, as an effect of how we act. The results always go back to the thoughts. So in my example, what was the result? Your little guy sat by himself at recess and was sad. And so that goes back to the thought, no one likes me. He affirmed his thought because, well, he took himself out of playing with anybody else where he could find other friends or have a good time doing something else. So our results either affirm the mirror image of what we think, or they give us evidence for what we think is true. The mirror image would be, but you're not being friends to anyone else. Now, you don't have to hit every one of these five areas when you're listening to your child, but just understand that they're very helpful to get clarity on exactly what they're talking about. So whether they come to you with their thought or their feeling or they tell you what happened, you want to go really carefully to the thoughts to make sure that what they think is true actually in a court of law could be true, or if it's just their opinion of things, and then help them move beyond that. Okay, we also want to ask questions for understanding. When we ask questions, just as I explained in going through those five different components of listening to someone, it invites connection. It invites conversation. It shows empathy. And it encourages our children or our husband or anybody else that we're listening to move forward, to help them get out of their brain, because their brain is going to want to keep offering the same thing over and over and over again. I have no friends. I have no friends. I have no friends. You know it. You experience it. I know I experience it. If I don't talk with someone about something that's really bothering me, my brain will just keep offering it as a truth over and over and over again. When in fact, most of what I think about myself in particular is not completely accurate. and to talk about it with someone else and let them ask me questions and dive in a little bit deeper, it helps me see where I'm not being truthful with myself. Okay, I hope that helps. I hope that you really focus on connection by paying attention to what your child is saying or your husband is saying, or even just a friend. When you're speaking with a friend and listening to a friend, here are some do's and don'ts when listening to anybody. First, again, make sure everyone is clear on story or fact. Okay, challenge their thoughts lovingly for clarity. Not to make a point or to convince them, but just to make sure that they understand just because they think it doesn't make it true and it isn't necessarily a fact. Next thing we want to be very careful is that we're just listening. No phone next to us, just in case somebody else might text us or whatever. At least that's what the person speaking sees. When they see a phone either in our hand or next to us, their subconscious says, I have her attention unless something else more important comes in on the phone. So move your phone away, okay? And when we hold space, we don't interrupt. We give them time and we just listen. And we don't immediately try to get in and solve the problem. People, especially our children and our husband, want to be listened to. And, you know, you could also say to your husband, hey, you know what? I heard this great podcast and I really would like to ask you that when I tell you about something, if you will just try not to solve my problem right away, just listen to me because I just need someone to listen to me. Just ask him for that, okay? So we hold space. We don't, you know, make judgments on what's being said. We don't try and say, oh yeah, but when I was a kid, nobody ever played with me all my years in elementary school or whatever, right? We don't try to minimize their pain by telling them some story about us that makes us feel like we were in more pain. So just listen without judgment, without trying to story match, and then have what we call clean thinking. Don't assume you know what your child is thinking. And I'll tell you, having children now gone through elementary and teenage years and even into adult years. So if you don't know, my children are in their, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm saying this, their later 30s. Down to early 20s. And I had to be very careful that I didn't assume at any level, any of those age levels, that I didn't assume what they were thinking or what they were trying to say. It was only through questions and patience and really taking the time to listen that they actually got down to the deep part of it, the part that really they were struggling with. So many times our children or our husband will come to us and have a problem that we can talk about for sure and listen to, but there's often something underneath that they're really struggling with so that when a problem comes up, it triggers that deep thing underneath that we really want to see if we can bring to the surface so they can deal with it and we can help them. So also in clean thinking, don't bring your insecurities or preconceived thoughts. Like, oh my gosh, if kids don't like my child, what are they going to think of me, right? We don't want to bring it back to us. It's not about us. It's about what they're trying to communicate right now. And then always come with empathy and curiosity. Even if you know your child's faults and you might think to yourself, well, I know why they probably don't want to be friends with you. Don't do that. Okay, everyone has faults. Even the kids they're trying to be friends with have faults. So listen to your child with empathy and curiosity. A couple of final points. What the human heart craves most is connection. I just want you to understand that. We want to be heard. Our children want to be heard, and so does our husband. So we listen with undivided attention. We're connected with eye contact. We have an open heart. We have empathy. We're not necessarily trying to solve their problems. We want to help them solve their problems by pointing out what really is truth and what isn't, and how they can proceed by changing their thoughts, looking at, you know, situations differently. All right, so a couple of specifics on how to listen to your husband. First, give him the respect of your undivided attention. Oh, I can't possibly do that. I have all these kids, and this one's yelling for this, and that one's that, and I'm usually making dinner. I've been there. I understand. I'm still saying, give him the respect of your undivided attention. If children interrupt, let them know you're talking to dad, and you'll let them know when you're finished. If you're truly in the middle of something that can't wait, let your husband know that you want to listen with all of your attention, and could he just wait a minute? And then, in a minute, go find him and say, okay, thank you for waiting. I can listen to you now. Also, move that phone away. Ask him to move his away so it isn't in sight and you guys are actually really listening to each other. Again, I remind you, listen without trying to solve his problems and ask him to do the same for you. You could say, do you want my thoughts on that? And he may say yes, and he may say no, and that's okay. When Michael came home from work, I would greet him with a hug and a kiss, and the kids were occupied while we went to our room. Sometimes I had a baby with me, and I asked him about his day. We closed the door. No one was allowed to interrupt us unless someone was really bleeding or there was a huge emergency. And we just trained the children to understand that. 15 minutes away, dad and me were alone. And I listened to him without telling him about my day until he was finished talking. On the days I wanted to complain or vent or tell him about my day first, instead, not all days, but I really tried to offer my desires as an act of love for him, and waited until after he finished talking. And I found that what that did was when we would go up to the room and I would say, how was your day? He'd say, well, tell me about your day first. Because he recognized what I was trying to do for him. And so we would kind of take turns. All right, how to listen to your children. First, let me say that when you listen to your children will listen to you. It is critical in parenting. People wonder, why aren't my kids ever listening to me? Probably because you're talking all the time. Are you taking the time to listen to them? Or are you constantly just correcting them all day long? We need to teach our children how to communicate, all right? So if they come to you screaming at you, I'm not suggesting that you listen to them. You help them regulate their emotions so that you can hear them. So I would say something like, I can't hear you when you're speaking like that. So calm down, and then you can tell me what's going on. And sometimes they'd bring it down a notch, but not quite a big enough notch. And I'd say, I still can't hear you. You need to calm down and tell me what's going on. Look at them and teach them to look at you, and teach them to speak clearly and concisely. And also not to yell from across the room. It's disrespectful. That also means that we can't yell at them from across the room. Now, sometimes that happens. Hey, time for dinner, whatever. But if it's more than just, you know, an announcement, get in the same room, eye contact, and speak in a calm voice. How to really listen to them. Get on their level. Stop whatever you're doing when you can. If you're in the middle of something, ask older children to wait, please, because you really want to hear what they're saying, but you're in the middle of something and you can't focus right now. And then, within a few minutes, get back to them, get down on their level, if possible, and say, okay, now I can hear you. What do you want to say? Don't jump in trying to fix or resolve their problem. Just listen. Remember those five areas. Ask them, well, tell me what really happened. And what did you think about that? Or how do you feel about that? Just get as much information as you can. And then ask them, well, what do you think you should do about it? Or Well, how do you want to feel about that? And then help them understand their feelings don't control them. They can go back to their thoughts to change their feelings. The last thing is how to listen to God. First, make yourself available. Be open. You have to spend time with Him, and it has to be time where you can really focus with Him. So at least 15 minutes a day, make it happen. Don't try to find time, make time. And then when you're in prayer, don't always talk at Him, okay? Thank Him for the things He's given you. If there are specific petitions that you need help with, go ahead and ask Him, but then be quiet. And you will hear what He's asking of you. And if you don't understand it, ask questions. What do you mean by that, God? What do you really want me to do? How do you really want me to behave in this particular situation? I mean, even Mary asked questions when the angel came to her. We can ask God questions. Ask the Holy Spirit, could you please make that clear? Because I'm really not sure what you mean. And then trust in His love. Just like you want your children and your husband to trust in your love, you need to trust in God's love. All right, that's it for today. Listen this week. Have a great week. Take care. Do you have a life coach who helps you be the woman you want to be? The woman God has called you to be? Who helps you sort through your marriage or parenting difficulties and helps you create the mindset you need to embrace your vocation with joy and gratitude? If you're looking for a coach, I would be so honored to help you. Email me at Janet@findingjoyinmotherhood.com.